This evening I have chosen an extremely difficult topic on which to speak. I chose it for a number of reasons. As citizens, we live in a land where we are constantly being confronted with a change in law, and we need to ask ourselves, how do we respond to government when there are things being done that we do not necessarily agree with? As Christian citizens, what responsibilities do we have to live? Are we to be marching with placards? Are we to be burning places? Are we to be killing those who are killing babies? Those are very serious questions. I want to suggest to you that in Canada, we look quite differently on law as compared to those south of the border. In the United States, politics is intertwined with their religion. You look at some of the well-known TV people, and they're very much involved in the political arena, and it is not so in Canada. Are they right, and are we wrong not to be a part of what's going on in the political scenery, or are we just in a different way? They're very, very serious questions we must ask. And what we must ask ourselves is, what manual can we go to be instructed as to how we are to deal in our response to the things that are happening? And therefore, I invite your attention not only to the text that was read by Mike this evening, but to the text from which I will speak, Romans chapter 13, Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 14. Romans 13, this is the pivotal passage in the New Testament dealing with the Christian's responsibility to law and what happens when we are confronted by certain things. Now, I want to assure you that I will not be dealing with government in the sense of who forms the president. I'll not be dealing with the NDP, whether we should vote NDP or whether we should vote conservative or whether we should vote liberal. I am dealing with government as a concept, as a principle, not as a political entity, for obvious reasons. I'm going to read just the first 10 verses of Romans 13. Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who oppose will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have the praise for the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath upon the one who practices evil. Wherefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due them. Tax to whom taxes due. Custom to whom custom. Fear to whom fear. Honor to whom honor. And then it moves into our practical and relational responsibility from verses 8 through 14. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. For this, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Love, therefore, is the fulfilling of the law. May God be pleased to bless his word to us. Now, I'm quite aware of the fact that there are children in the audience, and for this reason, I struggle a great deal because I know that this has to do more with the adult mind. But I trust that the Holy Spirit will use this word not only for our encouragement, but to put some seed of truth in the lives and hearts of our children, that they might benefit from this. Because there are many young people today. I've spoken with some. Others have spoken with some who have reported to me that believe that no one should ever tell them what to do. Well, friends, if we do not have laws which control us, just imagine what would happen to a community or society out of control. So I'm praying that God will use this word accordingly. Let me introduce the message with four introductory remarks. First of all, I want to give a simple definition of what law is. And I will use the term interchangingly. Law, a simple definition. It is any rule or injunction that must be obeyed. A law is any rule or injunction that must be obeyed. Whether we like it or not, they are there and we are called upon to obey them. Secondly, law in the Bible is used in several different ways. In fact, there are 12 different ways in which the word law is used in the Bible. Both New and Old Testament interchange the terms, and there are, scholars tell us, 12 different ways, and I have gone over those. Of course, I will not be dealing with those tonight. But the law is more than the Mosaic law, more than the ceremonial law. There are creation laws, there are marital laws, and we can go on and on. There are 12 distinct ways in which the word is used. As I said before, law and government will be used in interchanging expressions. My concern tonight is to deal with the origin and the objective of law. The origin and the objective of law. And so we ask ourselves the first question. What is the foundation for law? Where does the entire idea of law come from? Did it originate with our forefathers? Did it come from merely Moses who gave those 10 stones or 10 words at the beginning of time in the lives of the people of Israel? Just where does it come from? I want to suggest to you that history teaches us that the concept of law comes first of all from what is known as the law of nature. The law of nature. Some have called this natural law. If you please, the Roman Catholic Church, under the control and the direction of Thomas Aquinas, a brilliant mind of the 18th century, developed a whole concept based upon natural law, which controls not only the church, but that which they intend to go into society. Law, as I'm thinking of it tonight, Webster has a completely, I think, unique definition of it, and it goes this way. A law, a principle or a body of laws considered or derived from nature, right reason, or religion that is ethically binding upon all human being. Law is a principle or body of laws or rules considered or derived from nature. That is, man looks into the universe in which he lives and he concludes from that certain things are true. And because certain things are true, he concludes that if he is able to harness those things which he derives from nature and put it into written laws, they can be used to control a society. Right reason. In the 1960s, there was a great concern as to how are we going to control a population that seemingly was out of control when everybody was burning whatever they used to burn in the 60s, and they used to burn a lot of things. Whether you know it or not, during the 60s, there were some combined reasonings, minds of intelligent men and women who concluded, and this is verifiable, that it is possible to control a population of people by putting drug into the water systems so that people will be controlled that way and people will be under the control of someone else. When I read that, I asked myself, and who will control those who are putting the drug into the water? That's a very important question. Reason. We conclude by reason that some things are acceptable and some things are not acceptable. That is the image of God in us. Religion. There are those who believe that religion is a man-made control derived from antiquity, so that people would be controlled by being told that there is a God to whom they are responsible, and because people are innately religious, they will respond to that. Sigmund Freud was a father of that kind of a thought. Then we're told that these rules became binding upon society, and they were made into establishing legal laws that became the means by which man lives. Now, it is possible that by natural laws, a man or a woman or a society can do certain things, behavioral systems that are acceptable or not acceptable. If you have your Bibles, you turn, please, to Romans chapter 2, verses 13 and 14. Romans 2, 14 and 15, 13 and 14, I'm sorry. Romans 13 and 14. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law. And let me listen as I read. For when nations, you have the word Gentiles in your Bible, literally it means nations. When nations who do not have the law, that is, the Ten Commandments as the Jewish nation had it, when nations who have the law do instinctively the things of the law, these not having the law are a law. That is why you cannot go to any community of people, no matter how primitive they are, without finding some legislation by which they live. We might not agree with them. They might be primitive. They might be outmoded, but my friends, they live by a law. Don Richardson, in his book, Eternity in Their Hearts, tell of experience he had when he went on a mission field. And he found people who were actually practicing a certain kind of civil law, completely contrary to law as he knew it from North America. It was very interesting. They did not simply believe in an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. What they believed was that you are doing a just thing if you sacrifice a human life to pay for something else. And so we have that law. The problem with natural law, my friends, is this. Natural law derives from human hearts that are sinful. Those who derive from reason, from religion, and from nature, laws by which they can control society, they are themselves sinful. Do you want to see a beautiful picture of this? I invite your attention to 1 Kings chapter 12. It is a story of Rehoboam. Wonderful name. He was one of the sons of Solomon. And when Solomon died, he was elevated to the throne of his father. And he went to the senior citizens of the land. The people had come to him, and they had asked if he, as a new king, would lessen and lighten some of the heavy burdens placed upon them by his father, the king. He then went to some of the older senior citizens in the land and asked their advice concerning this thing. He said to them, "The people have come to me and have asked that I change some of my father's law to lighten the burden that they are carrying." He had exacted of them things that they were not able to pay. And the senior citizens, wise as they were, said to the king, "I think the people are right. Should lighten. You should remove some of the laws given by your father. You have the authority to do so." But 1 Kings tells us that he did not listen to wise counsel. He went to the young men. He wanted something modern. He wanted something new. And he went to his contemporaries, those who were in his age bracket. And he asked them the same question that he asked the seniors. And we are told that they said, "Listen, don't listen to the demands of the people. In fact, lay it on thicker. Make the rules more stringent." And you will read the description for yourself in 1 Kings chapter 12. And so you have this idea of what we see then, sinful men given position of making laws are themselves subject to a corruption from within. And that is why, my friends, natural law could never be the basis for law. I want to suggest to you, however, that we are living in a time when those who are in our judicial system, those who are in our legislative system, those who are in our executive system are moving away from what came to be the Judeo-Christian concept of law to return to creating laws from reason. And that is why we need to ask ourselves again, how do we respond to these things? We have people who are making laws that are contrary to reason, even though they are reasonably trying to make those laws. And so the concept of law then, on the one hand, is from the law of nature, or natural law. But then I come to you, my friends, secondly, and say that the true concept of law is from the Lord of nature. I want you to look now in our text again, Romans chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except, some translations say, from God. Literally, it means by God. By God. There is no authority. Now, this is not talking, my friends, about a political party, because the Bible does not speak about political parties. It speaks about ruling authorities. So what do we have? In Romans chapter 13, we are told that government, law as we know it, the concept, originates in the mind of God. Not simply from the laws which God gave to Moses in the Ten Commandments, but in the mind of God. I want to take you into a quick safari in the Bible to show you what I mean by this. Law existed before time was. Law existed before time was. I want you to go back with me in Isaiah chapter 14, verses 12 to 15. Isaiah 14, 12 to 15. I was talking to a mother not so long ago, one morning in my office, and we were talking about different things, and she had come to talk with me about a project in a school and so on, and we got talking about other things. And I said to this mother, as she shared some things with me, I said, you know, our children must understand that parents are not a mistake from God. Have you thought of that? Parents are not a mistake from God. Parents, my friends, are part of God's express laws by which His will revealed in Scriptures can be communicated to the citizens in the home that will soon become citizens in society. And if we miss that, we miss a great deal. So law did not exist because something was wrong. In the very presence of God, in the eternities, we find the presence of law. I mentioned to you Isaiah chapter 14. This is a scene taking place in heaven. Isaiah 14, 12. How are you fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of the dawn? You have been cut down to the earth. You have been cut down to the earth. You who have weakened the nations. But you said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. And I will sit on the mount of the assembly in the recesses of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will make myself like the Most High. Nevertheless, you will be thrust down to hell. This is God, my friends, giving us a little bit of the scenery. Time is halted for a moment and God takes us into eternity. And He shows us that long before time was, laws existed in eternity that the devil, who was an angel at that point, had to obey. So we turn to the sixth verse of Jude, and we're told that when angels did not keep their first estate, which means that God had boundaries in eternity by which angels were to obey, when they did not do that, God had established laws that would actually meet up with them at the end of their disobedience. Law predates time. It isn't something new. Law is not something human. We must understand that. There was law in nature. Law in nature. When God said, "Let there be light," and there was light, in Genesis chapter 1, verses 9 and 10, He separated the heavens from the earth, the sea from the land, and He made certain laws by which the sea remained the sea and which the land remained the land. That's a creation law. There was law in human relationship. God said to Adam and to Eve, "You may eat of the tree, all the trees in the garden, but of this tree of good and evil, the tree of knowledge, you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat, you will die." That's a law. God had boundaries. God had, my friends, injunctions that were to obeyed. We see it predating time, and we see it in time. I was counseling a couple for their coming wedding. And we were talking about certain things yesterday morning as we were dealing with some of this. And it was quite interesting to see the face, especially of the young man. It's very rare when you get a young man in your office talking about marriage and so on that his eyes are all starry. I mean, some guys are coming and they say, "Well, I got some fear about this one, you know, I'm not too sure about this." And I said, "But not him, he was just starry-eyed. I mean, he's looking." So I said, marriage is defended by God because God has placed certain law which makes marriage and family what it ought to be. I said to him, unto them, "A man and a man cannot constitute a family. Because the law of God says a man and a woman constitute a family, no matter what the laws say." See, that's a law. And when I shared some more concepts with him, he said, "I'm glad you said that." I don't know why he was glad I said that, but that's what he said. I want you to turn, my friends, to Daniel chapter 2, verse 21. Now, I'm laboring these points because we have to understand again that we're dealing with the concept of law and where it comes from. So that when we come up against certain things, we must ask ourselves questions having to deal with our conscience. And by the way, conscience can never guide anyone. Conscience is not a law. Conscience gives the perception to the presence of law. Conscience can never act in and of itself. There must be something there to which conscience responds to, but it cannot respond. Romans chapter 2 tells us this. But in Daniel chapter 2, listen to what Daniel said in his concept of law. "And he," verse 21, "who changes the times and the epoch, he removes kings and establishes kings." God removes and establishes kings. "He gives wisdom and knowledge to men of understanding. It is he who reveals profound and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells in him." In other words, God, who establishes the concept of government, the concept of law, is himself the standard by which laws are made. Remove God from the standard of law, and what do we have? We have reason left. We have mere religion left. We have nature left. And let me tell you, my friends, what Adolf Hitler says about nature. Hitler, and I'm quoting, saying this, "I see no reason why I cannot treat men as nature treats him." and he killed 6 million Jews. I see no reason why I cannot treat men the way nature treats men. And what was he looking at? He was looking at storms. He was looking at winds. He was looking at tornadoes. So that's nature. And if there's no one beyond nature, and nature treats men this way, then I have every right to adopt my philosophy of treating men as nature does. Human government has and is the arrangement of God. Romans 13:2. He who resists the government resists ordinance, the arrangement of God. Now again, I repeat, my friends, God did not produce a political party. Never did. Never did. He only produced the concept by which men are to be governed. And so we see this concept. Let's look quickly at Christians and the law. The concept of the law, there is natural law or the law of nature. But my friends, we as believers believe that the standard for law and order comes not from my view of things, not from the nature of things, but from the mind of God. That's what we believe. And that is why Mike read that passage this evening that tells us that as Christians, we see the law as something that is for our good because it comes from God, not something that is evil. Quickly, Christians and the law. Romans chapter 13, verse 1. Let every person be subject to the governing authority. Oh my. Does that include me as a pastor? I remember hearing about this pastor who was on his way to some event and he was speeding. You would know that had to come up somewhere, wouldn't you? And he was speeding and he was stopped. He resisted being stopped. You know why? Because he was a minister. Can you imagine that? There are some people, my friends, Christian leaders, who own businesses, and because they are Christians who own them, they say they shouldn't pay taxes for it. Let every soul, the word every means all, every, any, be subject. That word subject in original, my friends, is in a very wonderful tense. We don't use it, the tense of the verb. It is what is called the middle voice of a verb. And what that means is that when the middle voice is used in the context, we don't use it in English, but in Greek, when it is used, it means that something goes out from us and comes back to us. We could use the object of the verb in one way, and it doesn't have anything to do with us. For example, I was going to say, I threw the dog out. I become the subject. Throwing out becomes the verb and the dog becomes the object. In this text, it says this. Let every soul, me, brings from the law my obedience, brings it back to me so I voluntarily submit myself to it. That's the key. Why am I going to do this? Why will I voluntarily take the law that is established out there and bring it back to myself? Because, my friends, I understand that every governing authority is from God. The key is that before I respond to human authority, I respond to the concept from God. That is why. Now let's quickly look into it. What is required of Christians and the law? Number one, obedience. Obedience. We are called upon to obey the laws of man. Because no man is in a governing authority, civil authority, except God has made possible that concept for him to be in. I'm going to tell you, friends, one of the things that really gets to me, I really find this so hard. I hate paying the GST. Oh, I bought something the other day, and I thought I had enough money. Well, I did have enough money. But by the time the whole thing came to me, it was more than I had thought about. Then I, oh yes, that dreaded GST. Because I don't like it, am I obligated to withhold it? I can't do that. Because Paul did not say, let everyone be subject to good laws and oppose bad ones. He didn't say, if there's a good government, we obey them. If there's a bad one, we don't. No. He said, let every soul be subject. When Peter said, let every man hold in reverence the governing authorities, you know who was in the power at that time? Nero. Caligula. Men who were mean and vicious. And Paul and Peter reminds Christians that they are obligated. First, personally, obedience. Secondly, obedience leads to prayer for the government. 1 Timothy 2:2. One of the reasons I believe that we find it so hard to cope with governmental laws is because we don't pray for those in authority. We resist what they say, and therefore we think we ought not to pray for them. But just the opposite is true. Just the opposite is true. Everywhere, we readily, above all men as Christians, endeavor to pay those appointed by you the taxes, both ordinary and extraordinary. That might be the GST, extraordinary. As we have been taught by Jesus, we worship only God, but in other things we gladly serve you, acknowledge you as king and rulers, and praying that with all your kingly powers, you may be found to possess also sound judgment. With all your kingly powers. Let me quickly say this, my friends. Thirdly, we are to pray for them. We are to obey them. And I bring this particularly, we are to pay our taxes. It's a part of the system in which we live. Just imagine, if I withhold my taxes because I don't love it like a law, then the very tax I withhold will be taken away from those laws that I do love. Do you see it? If I don't pay my taxes, I will still get my water. They will still take care of my sewer. I might not like it. But if every citizen withholds their monies from something they don't like, then where will government get, my friends, the money to pay for the laws that keep our land together? We have to be extremely careful with this. Let me quickly go on. Not only do we obey them, we can oppose them. Aha, seems like a contradiction. We can oppose them. In Acts chapter 5, Peter was told he should not speak in the name of the Lord. The Supreme Court of the land said, you should not. But Jesus had said, you should. And so Peter could say in Acts 5, 24 to 29, it's better to obey God rather than man. What are we dealing with here? There are times when we must resist law, when that law, by obeying it, causes us to sin. I had a doctor friend when I was down at the other church. He was in a situation where he was called upon as a doctor to commit abortions, to practice it. And he let them know immediately that I will not do that. It is not part of my conscience to do that. Something in me tells me that is wrong. Daniel was told he should not pray. Prayer is a part of the mandate of the Christian life. And he went on to pray. How did he come to do that? Obedience, my friend, to the government when that government asks us to commit a sin is itself a sin if we obey that. Obedience to government when it asks us to disobey God is itself a sin. This is why I find it very, very hard. I love the works of Francis Schaeffer, but I cannot agree with civil disobedience. I cannot. Because he who resists the authorities resists God. There are three ways, my friends, we can oppose government. Three ways, quickly. One, through the executive branch. That is, the people we elect into office to make laws. Two, we lobby those people to keep promises, to change laws, or to make laws that will be right. The problem we have with that, of course, is sin itself. And thirdly, through the judicial system. I am sorry to say, however, that our judicial system is in great trouble, because our judicial system is now changing laws instead of upholding laws. Courts were never called upon to change laws. Only the elective, only the executive branch could change laws. And now we have, I don't need to go into it, but I can tell you of situations that have been done because the judicial system thought that this was wrong. They have no power to do so if you study law properly. Very quickly, and I'll close with this, the function of law. What should law be doing? Quickly, I'll just give you them as headings. One, to restrain evil. The function of law is to protect its citizens, not only from itself, but from others that would bring hurt to them. I can't develop that because my time is gone. It is to respond to human needs. Now, there's a great danger here. Because the wider, the bigger, the more powerful governments become, the more demanding the society becomes, the more laws that are needed, and so government takes over, and before too long, our freedoms are gone. There's a great danger there. Again, I can't develop that. We'll have to do that some other time. But there is a need. For example, in the times of Joseph, as a political leader, as a leader in civil government, he was given the responsibility to make sure that certain things would take place so that there would be enough food for everyone. There is a responsibility of government to respond to human needs. And thirdly, they are to reward moral good. I close with this word from Paul again. And again, I must cut the word short. The time is gone. Rulers are not a cause for fear for those with good behavior, but for those with evil. I always get a charge out of this. Have you ever noticed, my friends, when someone is speeding and someone flashes the light in front of you, immediately your right foot finds the brake pedal. Immediately something says, hey, something is wrong. Have you ever noticed, my friends, that when you come upon a child doing something wrong, that child becomes frightened because something tells them that there is a consequence for what they're doing? Every law of God has consequences in it. Every law. Good laws from man will have consequences. And God requires us that we love justice, that we love mercy, that we honor the King. And as Christian citizens, my friends, the community in which we live must see something in us that will make them want to become like us. We are not slaves, we're free people, and we choose to obey the law. And when it is necessary to say, God's word is being violated here in spite of what the law says, I must obey God, then let me suggest. I'll tell you why I'm saying this. Because, friends, let me suggest to you that although that bill giving same-sex rewards to homosexuals and heterosexuals alike, it's been dead locally, but it's not dead. It will show its ugly head again in the Supreme Court of Canada. And it is possible that it will pass. And if they will change the whole definition of the family, and when they change the definition of the family, I will be required, unless they make some provision, I, as a minister of the gospel, will be required to recognize and to solemnize homosexual marriage. Do you know, and I say this with every sense of respect for them, that at the present moment, the United Church of Canada is preparing a paper for the 1996 convention in which the word marriage and families will be removed from their laws and the blessing of union will replace that word. If I resist that, friends, because the law of the land says I must recognize it, then I will have to be ready to pay the consequence. As Paul says in the book of Acts, if I have done wrong, before it, and we must be ready, because the time will come when standing up for laws that violates not only my moral principles, but violates the revealed will of God, will cost us something to obey them. May God give us the strength we need to do so.